The Snow Goose, a short story by Paul Gallico. Episode 4. Now, the story becomes fragmentary. And one of these fragments is in the words of the man on leave, who told it in the public room of the Crown and Arrow, an East Chapel pub.
"A goose! A blooming goose, so help me," said Private Potton of His Majesty's London Rifles.
"Gone," said a bandy-legged artilleryman.
"A goose it was. Jock here, he seed it same as me. It come flying down out of the muck and stink and smoke of Dunkirk that was overhead. It was white, with black on its wings, and it circles us like a blooming dive bomber. Jock here, he says, 'We're done for. It's the angel of death that come for us.' 'Gone,' I says, 'it's a ratty goose come over from home with a message from Churchill. And how are we enjoying the blooming bathing?' 'It's an omen, that's what it is. A bloody omen. We'll get out of this yet, my lad.' We was roosting on the beach between Dunkirk and Lapany, like a lot of blooming pigeons on Victoria Embankment, awaiting for Jerry the potters. He potted us good too. He was behind us and flanking us and above us. He gave us shrapnel and he gave us eye explosives. And he peppers us from the blooming atmosphere with jittersmiths. And offshore, he's the Kentish Maid, a ready excursion scow. What I've taken many a trip on out of Margate in the summer for 2 and 6. Waiting to take us off, half a mile out from the blooming shallows. While we are lying there on the beach, done in and cursing, because there ain't no way to get out of the boat. Well, Stuka dives on her, and his bombs drop alongside of her, throwing up water like a blooming fountain in the palace gardens. A regular display it was. Then a destroyer comes up, and he says, 'No, you don't,' to the Stuka, with ack-ack and pom-poms. But another Jerry dives on the destroyer and hits her. Cool, did she go up. Burned before she sunk, and the smoke and the stink come drifting inshore, all yellow and black, and out of it comes this blooming goose, a circling round us trapped on the beach. And then round a bend he comes in a bloody little sailboat, sailing along as cool as you please, like a blooming toff out for a pleasure spin on a Sunday afternoon at Henley.' 'Who comes?' inquired the civilian.
'Him that saved a lot of us. He sailed clean through a boiler machine gun bullets from a Jerry and a jittersmith what was strafing. A Ramsgate motorboat what had tried to take us off had been sunk there half an hour ago. The water was all frothing with shell splashes and bullets, but he didn't give it no mind, he didn't. He didn't have no petrol to burn or explode, and he sailed in between the shells. Into the shallows he comes out of the black smoke of the burning destroyer. I'm a dark little man, with a beard, a blooming claw for an end, and an hump on his back. He had a rope in his teeth that was shining white out of his black beard, his good hand on the tiller, and a crooked one beckoning us to come. And overhead, around and round, flied the ruddy goose. Well, Jock here, he says,
'Lark, that's all over for us now. That's the bloody devil come for us himself. I must have been struck and I don't know it.'
'Gone,' I says. 'It's more like the good Lord he looks to me than any blooming devil. He did too. Like the pictures from the Sunday school books, with his white face and dark eyes and beard and all, and his blooming boat.
I can take 7 at a time,' he sings out when he's close. Our officer shouts, 'Good man, you're 7 near us, get in.' We waded out to where he was. I was that weary, I couldn't climb over the side. But he takes me by the collar of me tunic and pulls with a, 'In you go, lad, come on, next man.' And in I went. Cool, he was strong, he was.
Then he sets his sail, part of what looks like a blooming sieve from machine gun bullets, and shouts, 'Keep down at the bottom of the boat, boys, in case we meet any of your friends.' And we're off. Him sitting in the stern,
with his rope in his teeth, another in his crooked claw, and his right hand on the tiller, a-steering and a-sailing through the spray of shells thrown up by a land battery somewhere back of the coast. And the blooming goose is flying round and round, honking above the wind and the row Jerry was making, like a blooming Morris on the Winchester bypass. "I told you yon goose was an omen," I says to Jock. "Look at him there, a blooming angel of mercy. Him at the tiller, he just looks up at the goose with a rope in his teeth, and he grins at her like he's known her a lifetime. He brung us out for the Kentish maid, and turns round and goes back for another load. He made trips all afternoon, all night, done all. Of course, the bloody light of Dunkirk burning was bright enough to see by. I don't know how many trips he made, but him and the Nobby Thames Yacht Club motorboat and a big lifeboat from Poole that had come along brought off all there was of us on that particular stretch of hell, without the loss of a man. We sailed when the last man was off, and there was more than 700 of us aboard a boat that was built to take 200. He was still there when we left, and he waved us goodbye and sails off towards Dunkirk, and the bird with him. Blimey, it was queer to see that ratty big goose flying round his boat, lit up by the fires like a white angel against the smoke. A Stuka had another go at us halfway across, but he'd been staying up late nights and he missed. Well, by the morning we were safe home. I never did find out what became of him, or who he was, him with his hump and his little sailboat. Bloody good man he was, that chap. "Cool," said the artilleryman. "A ratty big goose. Whatcha know?"
In an officer's club in Brook Street, a retired naval officer, 65 years old, Commander Keith Brillodenner, was telling of his experiences during the evacuation of Dunkirk. Called out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning, he had captained a lopsided limehouse tug across the channel, towing a string of Thames barges, which he brought back 4 times loaded with soldiers. On his last trip, he came in with her funnel shot away and a hole in her side, but he got her back to Dover. A naval reserve officer, who had 2 Brixham trawlers and a Yarmouth drifter blasted out from under him in the last 4 days of the evacuation, said, "Did you run across that queer sort of legend about a wild goose? It was all up and down the beaches. You know how those things spring up. Some of the men I brought back were talking about it. It was supposed to have appeared at intervals the last days between Dunkirk and La Panne. If you saw it, you were eventually saved. That sort of thing."
"Hmm," said Brillodenner. "Wild goose. I saw a tame one. Dash strange experience. Tragic in a way, too. And lucky for us. I'll tell you about it. 3rd trip back, towards 6 o'clock, we sighted a derelict small boat. Seemed to be a chap or a body in her, and a bird perched on the rail. We changed our course when we got nearer and went over for a look-see. By gad, it was a chap. Or it had been, poor fella. Machine gun, you know, badly. Face down in the water. But it was a goose, a tame one. We drifted close, but when one of our chaps reached over, the bird hissed at him and struck at him with her wings. Couldn't drive it off. Suddenly, young Kettering, who was with me, gave a hail and pointed to our starboard. Big mine floating by. One of Jerry's beauties. If we'd have kept on our course, we'd have piled right into it. Oh, head on. We let it get 100 yards astern of the last barge, and the men blew it up with rifle fire. When we turned our attention to the derelict again, she was gone. Sunk. Concussion, you know. Chap with her, he must have been lashed to her. Bird had got up and was circling. 3 times. Like a plane, saluting.
dash queer feeling. Then she flew off to the west. Lucky thing for us that we went over to have a look, eh? Odd that you should mention a goose.
Fritha remained alone at the little lighthouse on the great marsh, taking care of the pinioned birds, waiting for she knew not what. The first days she haunted the sea wall, watching, though she knew it was useless. Later, she roamed through the storerooms of the lighthouse building, with their stacks of canvases, on which Ryder had captured every mood and light of the desolate country, and the wondrous, graceful, feathered things that inhabited it. Among them, she found the picture that Ryder had painted of her from memory so many years ago when she was still a child, and had stood, wind-blown and timid at his threshold, hugging an injured bird to her. The picture, and the things she saw in it, stirred her as nothing ever had before, for much of Ryder's soul had gone into it. Strangely, it was the only time he had painted the snow goose, the lost, wild creature, storm-driven from another land that to each had brought a friend, and which, in the end, returned to her with the message that she would never see him again. Long before the snow goose had come dropping out of a crimsoned eastern sky to circle the lighthouse in a last farewell, Fritha, from the ancient powers of the blood that was in her, knew that Ryder would not return. And so, when, one sunset, she heard the high-pitched, well-remembered note cried from the heavens, it brought no instant of false hope to her heart. This moment, it seemed, she had lived before many times. She came running to the sea wall, and turned her eyes, not toward the distant channel whence a sail might come, but in the sky, from whose flaming arches plummeted the snow goose. Then the sight, the sound, and the solitude surrounding broke the dam within her and released the surging, overwhelming truth of her love, let it well forth in tears. Wild spirit called to wild spirit, and she seemed to be flying with the great bird, soaring with it in the evening sky, and hearkening to Ryder's message. Sky and earth were trembling with it, and filled her beyond the bearing of it. Fritha, Fritha, Frith, my love, goodbye, my love. The white pinions, black-tipped, were beating it out upon her heart, and her heart was answering, Philip, I love thee. For a moment, Frith thought the snow goose was going to land in the old enclosure, as the pinioned geese set up a welcoming gabble. But it only skimmed low, then soared up again, flew in a wide, graceful spiral once around the old light, and then began to climb. Watching it, Frith saw no longer the snow goose, but the soul of Ryder taking farewell of her before departing forever. She was no longer flying with it, but earthbound. She stretched her arms up into the sky and stood on tiptoes, reaching, and cried, Godspeed! Godspeed, Philip! Frith's tears were stilled. She stood, watching silently long after the goose had vanished. Then she went into the lighthouse and secured the picture that Ryder had painted of her. Hugging it to her breast, she wended her way homeward along the old sea wall. Each night, for many weeks thereafter, Frith came to the lighthouse and fed the pinioned birds. Then, one early morning, a German pilot on a dawn raid mistook the old abandoned light for an active military objective. Dived onto it, a screaming steel hawk, and blew it and all it contained into oblivion. That evening, when Fritha came, the sea had moved in through the breached walls and covered it over. Nothing was left to break the utter desolation. No marshfowl had dared to return. Only the frightless gulls wheeled and soared and mewed their plaint over the place where it had been.